If you knew that your life was coming to a very quick end, how would you live differently? My guess is that you would live with greater purposefulness, with greater thoughtfulness. You might want to make sure that you made things right with family, friends, before you died. And perhaps you'd want to leave some instructions for those whom you're leaving behind as well. Parting words, hopefully words of wisdom and care. Now, as we continue our study of 1 Chronicles, this is where we are in the story of King David's life. His life is coming to an end. And as a father, David has one last charge, one last set of instructions for his son, Solomon. He wanted to make sure that Solomon was well prepared for what was coming next. But before David even talks to Solomon, he makes some behind-the-scenes preparations. Now, if you remember, last week we concluded after David had grievously sinned and 70,000 people had died as a result of his sin, and then he repented and God forgave him. If you remember, the parcel of lands that David had bought per God's instruction in order to build that altar would eventually become the land where the temple would be built. And so David is strongly thinking about what is coming next. And he knows, and we'll talk in a few minutes about the fact that it is not going to be for him to have the temple built, even though it was his desire. And so before David brings Solomon in for kind of one of those last father-son discussions, he makes some behind-the-scenes preparations. And this is what David said. He said, "Solomon, my son, is young and he's inexperienced. And the house to be built to the Lord must be exceedingly magnificent, of fame and glory throughout all the lands. I will therefore make preparation for it." Now, we don't really know exactly how old Solomon was, but he's probably somewhere in the range of 20 to 30 years old. So he's young. He's not a child, but he's still young. And David says, you know, he's not experienced. He lacks leadership experience, especially the kind of leadership experience that would be required to not only build the temple for God, but to lead the entire nation of Israel. And so David wanted Solomon to have the greatest chance at success in these endeavors of building the temple and leading the people well. So what did he do? He did everything in his power to lay a great foundation for his son. For years, David amassed countless quantities of building materials for the temple, which he desired to be exceedingly magnificent, of fame and of glory. Now, those words describe God. They describe the God whom David served, and those words still describe the God whom we serve today. And because those are the words that describe God, that was how the temple where God's presence would dwell, that is how the temple was to be built. It was to be built with great beauty and glory and fame. And David ensured that only the finest of materials and the best of workmen were going to be used for the job. And if you read through verses 2 through 4, you see just the countless different things that David has amassed in terms of materials and the different kinds of laborers that he has called in order for Solomon to have the best chance at success. But as David made these preparations, he knew that making plans for the temple was about as far as he could go. And so he called Solomon in. I can only imagine what this would be like as a father, knowing your time is coming to an end and saying, "Son, come, we need to talk." Now, before we get to David's specific charge, to the specific words of instruction that he gave to Solomon, I want to encourage those of you who are parents, grandparents, and any of you who have any influence over children at all. So that pretty much includes all of you, because all of the young kids have gone to 411 or to children's church. So that means we have older non-adults, like young teenagers, older teenagers, young adults, and so on and so forth. We all have some realm of influence on children around us. It's clear that David has a plan for his son. The only way we're going to influence the younger generations is if we have a very clear plan in place. If we are intentional about thinking through what does it look like for us to be preparing the next generations for successful living and following the Lord. While David prepared for Solomon what would be needed to build the temple, we would do well to be prepared to lead our children spiritually. David's charge in the following verses give us a good model, a good framework for some of the things that we should be looking at in terms of how to approach leading children spiritually. And so that's our second point. David's charge to Solomon. This is what David says to start in verse 7. He says, "My son, I had it in my heart to build a house to the name of the Lord, my God." David desired to build a temple for the Lord. Here you see David coming alongside of his son and saying, "Son, this is one of the things I really wanted to accomplish. This is one of the things I really wanted to do while I still had life and breath here on this earth." But just as he shared with Solomon about this dream, about this vision that he had had to do this, he tells him, "I'm not going to be able to do it." That's what he says. "But the word of the Lord came to me saying, 'You have shed much blood and have waged great wars. You shall not build a house to my name because you have shed so much blood before me on the earth.'" God had spoken to David and had been very clear in the message he gave him that he would not be the one to build the temple. Too much blood had been spilled at David's hand, and God would not permit him to do as he wished. Now, the Lord had led David to many military victories over the years. And so you might wonder, what in the world? Why would God not want him to do this? When I read this blood that's on David's hands, that was shed on his watch, not only is it because of the wars that he waged, but think back to last week and the 70,000 men who died as a result of David's sin. Just as Moses was not able to lead Israel into the promised land, he led them to the cusp of it. He led them to the edge of it. He wasn't able to bring them in. Why? Anybody remember? What did he do? He struck the rock. God had told him, "Instruct this rock to bring forth water." But he was so frustrated with the nation of Israel, he struck it. And you might think, "Hey, you know what? That's really not that big of a deal. Water came out anyway." But Moses disobeyed God, just as David disobeyed God. There's consequences to sin. And as a result of David's sin, as a result of all this blood that was shed on his watch, and because of him, he was not going to be able to build the temple. Now, I mentioned in the children's message When I was talking to the kids, I said, hey, do your parents make mistakes? Do your parents sin? And every one of their hands went, right? It's just part of life, right? We fail. We sin. And sometimes it's hard to break the specific sin pattern that's in our lives. And our kids see it. And if we're not careful, they pick it up. And they reproduce it and reproduce it. One of the things that I learned from this part of David's charge to his son is, hey, admit your mistakes, admit your faults, confess your sins. Share about the mistakes you made, not only in the present, but in the past. Now, you never know what your kids are going to do with it. You never know how they're going to respond. But you're just responsible for you. To lead them in a way that would hopefully point them to God and help them to avoid the pitfalls that have made you fall. Something I want to encourage you to do, and to do on a regular basis. And even to take the failures of your own children, their sins, and instead of disciplining out of anger, which really isn't good discipline, it's just kind of more like revenge, discipline them with the purpose of redirecting them towards Christ. The whole point is that their heart would be drawn to Him. And if we just act as though we can rule with an iron fist, how is that going to point to God? Now, we need them to know that there is a very clear difference between right and wrong. But we also need to come alongside of them gently and say, hey, your mistake is not too much. Your sin is not too much for the grace of God to cover. So let's have those kinds of honest discussions. I love this part of David's interaction, the vulnerability that he's showing to his son. He could have just as easily left this out and said, hey, you know what? God doesn't have it for me to build the temple. It's your job. But no, he brings in his responsibility, the reason why he's not doing it. We would do well to be vulnerable with the children that are entrusted to us. Now, I can only imagine that David was grieved that he would not be able to build the temple. It was something that he longed to do. He had been preparing for years to do. Just like Moses had led the people through the wilderness for 40 years, only to not be able to go into the promised land. But just as Moses handed off the leadership to Joshua, so David did the same thing for Solomon. And so throughout verses 6 through 10, four times it is mentioned that a house would be built in the name of the Lord. And so what David wanted Solomon to know was, hey, this temple that's going to be built, it's going to be built with fame. It's going to be magnificent. It's going to be beautiful. But it's not for you. And you see that four times in verses 6 through 10, that the house would be built in the name of the Lord. It would be built to the name of the Lord. The building of the temple was not a symbol of Solomon's greatness or the greatness of Israel's strength and glory. It was to be built to the glory of God. Now, this was very sound advice for someone who had just dealt with a huge issue of pride. Now, go back last week and remember that what led David to take a census of Israel? God hadn't commanded it. He wanted to know how many men he had in his military. He wanted to know just how strong he was. It was an issue of pride. And so as David learned through his pride, he's turning to his son and basically saying, son, don't make the same mistake. This building, it's not for you. Don't take any credit for it. This is for God's glory. It's to demonstrate to all people who see it just how amazing our God is. It's clear that David wants Solomon to remain humble and to make much of God as he erects this beautiful temple. Now, this is great advice, and in many ways it mirrors or parallels some of what Paul writes later in some of his letters. He writes about this several times, but in Colossians 3:23, he says, "Whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men." Whatever you do, whether you eat or drink, do it to the glory of God. Just as Solomon was supposed to build this temple to just proclaim the greatness of God, so we, whatever it is that we're doing, whether we're working, and maybe you have a drab job, a job that you really don't like, well, you know what? God has called you to do that job to His glory. Or maybe you really enjoy your job, but you do it because you get some sense of satisfaction because you get the job done. Don't find satisfaction in the job. Find satisfaction in the Lord and point towards Him in the way that you work. What about at school? Students. How many students do we have? Young and old. Anybody in high school, middle school, college, graduate? Yeah, we got a lot of students. Be a student for the glory of God. What does that mean? Well, that means some very basic things. Don't cheat. Don't plagiarize. But it also means work hard. Work diligently. Not so that you can feel good about yourself, but so that you can demonstrate just how great God is. Say, you know what? I'm not naturally a hard worker. I'm naturally lazy. But in spite of that, God has transformed me from the inside out. And I do this because He has given me a brain to use for His glory. What about at home? How do we relate with one another? Do we relate to one another for the glory of God? Do your interactions with your family members, whether your spouse, your children, your parent, your aunt, your uncle, your grandparent, your grandchild, do those relationships reflect the glory of God? Or do they rather reflect the dark, sinful nature that we have? Now, that's going to come out. It's just going to come out. But are your relationships just so bathed in the glory of God that people are just like, wow, what's up with your family? You're so different. You're so different. And what about ministry? Yeah, many of you, most of you are involved in some kind of ministry here in the church, in some mission, or on college campuses, school campuses, at your work, wherever. You're involved in some kind of ministry. Why do you do it? Do you do it because you have to? Sometimes. Do you do it because you want to? Hopefully. Do you do it so you can feel good about yourself? Well, not often, hopefully. Ultimately, at the foundation of it all, do you do it for the glory of God? Because if you do, it changes everything. It changes your focus. It's not about getting the job done. It's about glorifying God. It's not about force-feeding somebody the gospel. It's about glorifying God and being a good steward of the message He's given to you. It's about pointing others to God. And so when things don't go the way you want, and in ministry, it's often like that. Things change. Things don't go as you planned. You know what? Are you flexible enough to trust that God has a plan? Or are you going to be anxious, as I sometimes can become, and try to control those things? It's all about God's glory. Solomon was to build this temple for the name of God, and we are to do whatever it is that we do for the glory of God. David continues, and he basically tells Solomon, trust God in the whole process. You've got a lot coming. He says, may the Lord grant you understanding. Oh, I skipped one. Oh, it's not there. Here it is. Verse 11 is just not highlighted. Success. May the Lord grant you success. May the Lord be with you. This is key to it all. Without God's constant favor, without His presence, without God's faithfulness demonstrated to Solomon, success is not going to take place. Just as David charged Solomon to remember that the building of the temple was for God's glory, so David made sure that Solomon remembered that any of the successes were a result of God's favor. They're a result of God's faithfulness. The Lord be with you and grant you success. This charge, again, seems to be a warning to Solomon against the sin of pride. Any success that Solomon would see was a result of God's faithful hand. Now, success, I don't know about you, but success can sometimes go to your head. If you get an A on a test, oh man, I did a good job. If you get a promotion at work, man, I've been working for this. Any success is a result of God's faithful hand, His grace. Even in our own abilities, the abilities that you have, if you're smart, if you're really good with computers, if you're really good with people, or any number of different things, God has designed you, He has wired you in a specific way. And as a result, we need to give Him glory. And we need to trust in Him that as we use those abilities, that He will grant us success according to His will. Now, success according to Him is not always the success that we measure here in this world. You know, success in our world is often, hey, promotion after promotion after promotion, or straight A's. Success is faithfully living and trusting in God. It is trusting in Him and not leaning on our own understanding. And that's a picture of what we see next in verse 12. Only may the Lord grant you discernment or discretion and understanding. David's charge wasn't just about building the temple. It was about leading the nation of Israel in a righteous way. And David wanted to make sure that Solomon would stay right with God, that he would live as obedient and faithful. Now, sin has a way of creeping in and influencing the way that we think and act. And David's desire for Solomon was that he would have great wisdom, that he would have great understanding to lead God's nation in a way that would honor God. Now, Solomon, as the son, shows us that he heard this and that he lived it out. And I just mentioned it a couple minutes ago, or just less than a minute ago. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him and He will make your path straight. Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. Who wrote that? Solomon. Parenting success. When the instruction you give to your child is not only lived out by that child, but as you read through the Proverbs, what do you see Solomon writing? To whom is he addressing this? My son. My son. My son. David taught Solomon. And Solomon takes that instruction to heart, lives according to it with some sins along the way, but he passes it along. He shares it. He believes in it. And that's what he tries to pass on to the next generation. This should be our desires, parents, grandparents. This should be our desires, that we would see our children follow Christ. But not that it would end there, but that it would continue for generation after generation after generation. That's one of my prayers. Now, God's grace has been evident in my family for many years. We are sinful just like anyone else. I can't go back far enough in time to find a grandparent that did not follow Christ. I don't know how far to go. God's been faithful. It's not a guarantee. You can be faithful parents and your children can choose to rebel. But man, my prayer is that the faithfulness that our family has experienced doesn't end with me. I haven't seen my kids trust Christ yet. They're starting to verbalize the gospel. I haven't seen true evidence yet of a changed heart. But my prayer is that it wouldn't just end with Sophia, Eliana, or Seth, but that it would continue for generation after generation. And in many ways, this is the discipleship model that Paul gave in the New Testament, saying, you know, what you have learned from me, entrust to men, who then entrust it to others. You know, it's a multiplication of the gospel changing us from the inside out. And so we need to be trusting God in this process and asking Him to change us and to change our children. In order to follow any of these instructions, Solomon would need to be strong and he would need to be courageous. Following and obeying God is often a very unpopular thing to do. And as a result, courage and strength would be needed for Solomon to stay in the right direction. And we know along the way he makes plenty of mistakes. But as a leader who's leading a nation with people who are bound to follow their own desires, Solomon had to be strong and courageous to be willing to keep going down the right path. We live in a day and age where the message that we believe, that the lifestyle that we seek to lead, is extremely unpopular. Now, we do not face any of the persecution that our brothers and sisters face in the Middle East or parts of Asia, Africa, and elsewhere. But the message is still unpopular. It still takes great strength and great courage to live out a life that is devoted to God. It's easy to shy away from living a life that is just glorifying to God because we just don't want to hear it. We don't want to hear people's opinions. We don't want them looking down on us. My friend, we need strength and we need courage to live faithfully in this day and age. We just do. And I pray that we find that in the Lord. You can't muster up that strength on your own. It only comes as a result of God and His favor. The last thing that David tells Solomon is this. Work hard. Work hard. He reminds him, hey, I've provided stuff for you. I've given you a great foundation upon which you can build. I've given you all these building materials. I've given you all these people that will take care of all the skilled labor. Don't forget what I've provided. As a father, he's telling his son, I've done everything in my power to equip you. But now the job is yours. Arise and work. The Lord be with you. Diligence, perseverance, stick-to-itness. All those things would be required in order to complete the project of building the temple, in order to lead God's people faithfully. But Solomon had to take personal responsibility and follow through with hard work. Our children need to learn this lesson as well. They need to learn what it looks like to work hard. And I know many of you have led your children to do that. Now, my children are still at an age where they seem to actually like enjoy coming alongside of me or Laura and doing stuff. And so a couple weeks ago, Laura was weeding our garden to, you know, make sure it was as best prepared for the spring. And she had a little helper, 4-year-old Ellie. They were out there 2+ hours. And Ellie just worked and worked and worked. She just seems to have that naturally. As she gets older, I'm sure it'll be more challenging. Hey, Ellie, you want to go weed? No, Dad. That really wasn't a question. You want to go weed? Right. We need to teach. We need to model it. If all we do when we get home is just kick back and watch TV, what's that teaching our kids? But hey, if we say, hey, you know what? I've got this project. You want to come help me? When in reality, them helping you actually hurts you because it takes more time. You ever go through that? It's still worth it. Yeah, I'm working on projects all around the house. Anytime I have my drill, Seth, 1 year old. He wants to be with me, right? So I'm putting these safety locks on the cabinets because he keeps getting into them. But he's learning. Teach your kids about hard work. They'll learn. And they'll be able to model that as well. But teach them that working is not enough. Trusting in God is the essential component to it all. Because if all we teach our kids is to work, 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 we're not teaching them to trust. Trust and work. Trust and obey. They can't be separated. Or at least they shouldn't be. So David concludes his talk to his son, but he's not done. He's made preparations. He goes to Solomon. He says, hey, this is what I want for you. I want God's best, and this is how you accomplish it. And there's lots of things in these verses that we just don't have time to cover. I encourage you, study it, look at it, and use this as a model for leading children. But the last thing he does is he takes his leaders and talks to them. Now, David's a king, so he has leaders, he has advisors. You know, all of us, you might be king of your castle, but you're not king of a nation, right? You don't have, you know, quote unquote advisors, but listen to this and let's talk about what this might look like in our lives. David knew Solomon needs help. Remember, very beginning, chapter 22, verse 5, he's young and inexperienced. He needs help. He needs people to come alongside of him. And guess what, guys? I'm dying. I'm about to expire, and I need to know that people are going to come alongside of my son to help him. I need to know that I can trust that you will have his best interest in mind. I can't imagine entrusting that to someone else in the way that I no longer am able to have that influence on my children. I'm thankful for the many of you who do come alongside and help my children. But I can't imagine what David's going through, even just emotionally, as his life is coming to an end. Just thinking, you know what? This is my last opportunity to shape my son. But he doesn't just tell his leaders, hey, you need to help him. You need to give him sound advice. This is what he says. This is critical. Set your mind and your heart to seek the Lord. He's saying, as leaders, you need to make sure that your hearts are right before God if you're going to try to help my son. Because if your hearts and your minds are not set on the Lord, you're just going to lead my son astray. So ask God to be faithful to you. Trust in him. Obey him. And help my son. Who do you have who comes alongside of you to help you in what you do? Well, you have one another. We have each other. We talked about this last week, how the body of Christ is designed, not just so that we can gather together, which is an important thing on Sunday morning, but so we can co-labor in life together, so we can carry one another's burdens, so that we can encourage one another when we're down, so that we can share advice from a life of lessons that we've learned. And I've learned so much from each of you since I've been here. We're approaching 8 years. It's hard to believe, been here 8 years, but I've learned so much from so many of you. And I thank you for loving my children well, for loving my wife and myself well, for caring for us. So we've talked about three different people in this story. We've talked about David, and he's the father. He's the parent. We've talked about the young and the inexperienced son, Solomon. And we've just very briefly talked about these leaders, the ones that David asked to help his son, Solomon. Now, who are you in this story? Well, you might be in each of these roles. You might be a parent. You might still have your parents around and be their child. And you very well may be a leader. But if you're the parent, take time to prepare your child for the life that is ahead of them. Now, don't hear me wrong, but let's not just focus on extracurricular stuff. Extracurricular stuff is great, whether it's athletics or music or anything else. I enjoyed those as much as anybody else when I was a kid. And I benefited and I learned a lot of lessons. But as parents, let's not just run our kid from event to event to event. Let's prepare their heart. Let's take time and be vulnerable, like I talked to you earlier, and say, hey, you know what? This was my mistake. Or these were my many mistakes. I want what's best for you. And learn from your kids and ask them to share with you. Prepare your kid for the calling that God has placed on their life. Are you a child, a teenager, a young adult, or an adult who still has parents around? Listen to their instruction. Listen. Your parents have a lot to teach you. I don't care how old you are. I still learn a lot from my parents. Listen. Kids, teenagers, look up. Listen. The time you have with your parents is fleeting. A number of you are going away to college soon. Don't waste your time. Spend time with your parents. Pursue their instruction. Don't just listen to it, but pursue it. Ask for their wisdom. Are you a leader? How are you impacting the younger generations? What are you doing specifically to pour your life into somebody else? God has designed for us, whether you're related by blood or related by the blood of Christ, He's given us this awesome organism called the church. Let's intermingle. And I'm thankful for some things that are happening between our seniors and our teens. And if you're not in on that, let me know or let Nancy know and we'll let you in on that. Where teens and seniors are partnering together and just catching up with one another every week. What an awesome thing. Just to spend time asking about one another's week. So one of our seniors had one of our teens helping out at a ministry we had this week. How awesome was that? That is just such a blessing to see. Whoever you are in this story, trust and obey the Lord. Don't lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him, and He will make your path straight. Let's pray.